I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Joining us right now on the Matt Suarez Hotline is our pal Kevin McCarthy, entertainment reporter for Fox 5.
It's Papa time.
I just watched you going at it with Tucker on Fox 5. I just caught the tail end. It looked like you guys were poking fun at each other. What was the topic?
Oh, well, good morning to you guys. Yeah, it was the end of the segment. They were talking about what R-rated movies their parents took them to see when they were younger, and Tucker was just saying that he went to see Alien with his kid, with his family, and it was like more of a, because I reviewed a horror film prior to that moment. So they were just talking about what movies they saw as kids with their parents. It wasn't like a huge funny thing. It was just more of like a joke.
It was just your fake laugh.
The laugh I had was because I made a really bad joke about Kiss. So like we have Paul Stanley coming in the studio today, so I said you're not going to want to kiss Good Day DC instead of Miss. I was just kidding around. Hey, you guys, you guys made me, so that's what happens on TV every morning in DC because
Paul
of you guys.
Stanley. Right? Was he our mystery guest?
He was our mystery guest.
Just don't play mystery guest with him.
Yeah, make it a DC tradition. Whenever he comes to DC.
We guessed every other celebrity in the history of the world and didn't guess Paul Stanley.
he got hurt just to
mess with him.
Yeah, he was not too pleased.
He didn't like it.
I know that Cakes, by the way, I think my favorite part of the week now is calling in and then hearing that Pantera song playing. It's amazing that we were able to get Walk as the entrance song. So thank you guys for doing that.
That's your doing, my friend.
By the way, last week we spent a lot of time talking about A Star Is Born, which is Gaga. I saw that there's a movie about Queen coming out soon too.
It's a big year for like music films. Yeah, I actually saw 30 minutes of the Queen film. It's called Bohemian Rhapsody. Rami Malek plays Freddie Mercury.
Kevin, I'm sorry I interrupted, but you've seen more of it than I have. I've seen the trailer a couple times. He becomes Freddie Mercury. It's scary.
I told him that, man. I remember sitting across from him for an interview, we were in Vegas a couple weeks ago for the press event for that movie, and I said to him, I was like, listen, I'm not trying to say this because I'm sitting across from you right now. We're in a press junket setting, but I'm actually genuinely scared by the fact that I could not see you on screen anymore. It was just Freddie Mercury. I never met Freddie Mercury, obviously. I never saw him in concert. So my only viewpoint of him is old videos or like the Live Aid video concert footage. But seeing the movie, I felt like I kind of met him, weirdly enough, because that's how great he is in the movie. But I've only seen 35 minutes of it or so. And it's truly insane, and they actually use Freddie's voice in the film. So a lot of problems with musical films these days is that when someone's lip syncing, it's very obvious. And so Rami Malek actually belted out the vocals on set, so that way you can see his throat moving or like the veins in his throat moving when someone actually sings. So then they pump, Freddie's voice and some of Rami's voice through the speaker and through the actual sound, and it sounds amazing. I mean, especially. You guys remember the Live Aid concert, obviously, right? When they played Wembley Stadium, that was a huge, massive show. I mean, I know you weren't there, but it was a huge show. And it was just one of those, it's amazing how they recreated it. Like, they have, like, this camera shot that goes from the top of Wembley into the crowd. And we're talking about recreating something with thousands and thousands of people and making it look realistic, which is just surreal. So, yeah, that movie opens up, I think, November 2nd, I want to say. But the footage I saw for that was insane.
All right, so what are the movies you saw this week? I do know that Life Itself is one of them, which is a documentary about Roger Ebert, I believe.
No, that's funny you said Life Itself was a book about Roger Ebert, but the movie Life Itself that's coming out this weekend is different from that. It's actually directed and written by the guy who created This Is Us. And essentially, Yeah, I mean, This Is Us is obviously a very emotional show that people watch, and everyone. I've never actually sat down and watched a full episode of the show. My wife loves it. I don't know if you guys watch it at home, but
very good show.
Yeah, so imagine This Is Us in an R-rated setting. So Dan Fogelman wrote and directed this movie, who created This Is Us, and it's Olivia Wilde, Olivia Cooke. You have Oscar Isaac. You have Manny Patinkin. It's essentially a Tarantino-esque nonlinear storytelling structure with Antonio Banderas as well.
So nothing to do with Roger Ebert.
No, not at all. Well, no, Life Itself is the name of a book that Roger Ebert wrote, and I believe there was a documentary called Life Itself that was based on that, so you're not far off. But yeah, this is a movie that's getting destroyed by critics, and I don't really understand the negativity. I saw it in Toronto. I saw like 9 films when I was at the film festival, and this is one of the movies I saw. And every person I ran into, everyone said they hated this movie. I don't really understand the disturbing hatred people have for this movie. I don't think it's a great film, but I do find the movie to be profound. It has a great messages, great performances. It's getting destroyed on Rotten Tomatoes. So if you guys are looking at that, I mean, it's definitely down there as one of the worst reviewed movies of the year.
It's at 13%.
I mean, I guess you just mentioned some of the stars. So the biggest star is Olivia Wilde.
Mandy Patinkin, Olivia Cooke. You also have Samuel L. Jackson, Oscar Isaac from the Star Wars franchise. I found this film to be profound, and I remember leaving it when it was over. I had to walk to see the new Halloween movie, and there was like a 20-minute walk to the different theater, and I had one of the most profound conversations I ever had with a friend of mine because of the message of the movie. So I've been saying this a lot recently. I think film criticism, you can't go into a movie without what you have in your own life. You know what I mean? So when you sit in that theater and you watch a film, that's what's happening. Whatever's happening in your mind and your life, you bring that to the theater with you. So people have different experiences in movies, and this movie just hit me differently than it did other people. I really liked it. Again, I don't call it great, but I do think it's emotionally manipulative at times, which is some of the criticisms behind it. But I gave it a 3.5. I really, really liked the film a lot. I think the performances are great, and I think if you're a This Is Us fan, check it out. But I understand why people are not liking it. It just hit me differently.
Is there a plot twist at the end?
Well, it's like, you guys will appreciate there's like a Bob Dylan-esque element to it. There's not really a twist per se, but the whole point of the movie, JP, is this idea of one random moment shaping the lives of dozens of people. I mean, this is how random this is. There's two characters who meet over a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I know it sounds crazy, but that then changes the course of dozens of people's lives years to come, and it's truly profound to think about what random moment led us to where we are right now. You know, it really, if you think about like going out that macro level deepness of like life, it's pretty insane if you think about it.
Maybe right. EB's award-winning peanut butter and jelly, and it changed their lives.
Well, you know, Kevin, though, you're right. I just looked at Rotten Tomatoes after you mentioned it. So it's at 13% by the critics.
Yeah.
But the audience is at 71%. So the people who are actually seeing it like it. The critics, for whatever reason, aren't feeling it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I try to do this, and I don't know if I succeed in this every week, but I try to watch a film and just watch it from my perspective and give my personal opinion on it. And
that's how
you know,
it should be.
People don't agree with me always, and I that's okay. I learned early on when I first started with you guys, you know, that if you're not polarizing in this business, then you're not doing things right. And I think, you guys know this, when you first started out, people say the worst things to you or disagree with you about things, and I just find it to be, you're going to be differing in opinion with people, and if people want to listen to your reviews, they will, and if they don't want to listen to them, they won't. I mean, it's just one of those things that differed.
Will they still hit you up on social media, like, oh, Kevin, you gave it a 4 stars or whatever, and it blows? Like, they do that all the time?
Yeah, I mean, I have people who listen to my reviews just to do the opposite of what I say. So, like, I'll have people.
Kevin,
I'll literally have people like say, "Oh, you hated it? Oh, I can't wait to see this movie." Or, "You loved it? I am skipping it in 2 seconds." I mean, there's a movie coming out in a couple weeks called First Man, which is this movie about Neil Armstrong, and it is getting so much pre-hate because of a controversy surrounding the idea of the flag being planted on the moon, and that scene not being specifically in the film. The flag is in the movie, but the scene of the planting specifically isn't there. And I've just been getting so much hatred on social media because I love the film. People telling me that I can't like it. The movie's quote-unquote anti-American. So it's just mind-blowing how negative people are, and you just have to kind of just go with your gut and say what you like and what you don't like.
I do respect you for continuing to do your Twitter hustle when people think that you're the Kevin McCarthy in politics, and you still like shoot back some movie that they should watch and just take the shrapnel and just shrug it aside.
You basically say, let's be film friends, and then you recommend a movie for them.
Do they ever respond to you, Kev, when you do that?
Well, here, there's a couple crazy things that happen, Eric, that's really funny. So two things. One, most of the time they'll delete the tweet, but what I do is I screenshot it and then tweet out their screenshot if they delete it anyways. Second of all, they'll either apologize or then say, oh, I am a movie fan, so I'll start following you and we'll talk about movies legitimately. The craziest part about that whole situation is that Kevin McCarthy, the guy that they're confusing me for, follows me on social media, so he sees all these horrendous things people are saying
about
him.
Somebody in the staff sees it. He probably doesn't have time to check his Twitter.
So get this. So the other day I posted one of them on Instagram, and he commented back on it saying, oh, you should see the negative comments I get for your review of Dolphin Tale 2 or something like that. So he privately messaged me, and we're trying to work this out. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but he wants me to go to the White House and, like, watch a film with him and then talk about it. Like, just genuinely just review the movie. And it's so random. Like, he'll message me randomly. I was in Oregon a couple weeks ago doing that Blockbuster story, and he was like, hey, I'm in Portland. Where are you at? I'm like, it's just strange.
He's trying to be your buddy.
Dude, that could be the Speaker of the House.
Hey, Kevin, let me just make it clear. You are the most important Kevin McCarthy in my world. Now, in a lot of other people's world, it's that other Kevin McCarthy, but you're my number one guy.
It's just a really weird world that I'm connecting with this guy over this type of stuff. I mean, I've told you guys this story before, but, you know, since I work with Fox, I mean, I go to these studios sometimes, and the people who are walking in and out of these studios while I'm sitting there, you know, getting ready to review Ninja Turtles or something like that, like Kellyanne Conway sitting next to me on the phone with Donald Trump at some point or whatever. It's just very strange, like, the world I'm living in with the reviews.
From
stuff.
Benjamin Netanyahu to BBK.
It's a lot different environment than changing, the Goldfish or whatever in Jeff Hedges' office.
Dude, one time I was sitting in the green room, and I was sitting in the room, and Bob Woodward and John Brennan walked in, and I'm just like, hey guys, I'm here to review the new Michael Bay movie or something like that. I can't remember what it was. And then I walk out, and then, like, there's, like, Secret Service everywhere and, like, dogs, and, like, Mike Pence walks down the hallway. It's just really strange. Like, it's really weird to see it all. Very strange.
I'm telling you, and behind the scenes, I wanted to write a book with you, because you should be writing a book about all of your experiences.
Why would you want to? Why would you want to write the book?
Because I'm capable.
Oh, it's just a pain in the ass. Who would want to do it?
You just talk to him and then write.
Yeah. Oh.
Anyway, you saw the house with a clock in its walls, which stars Jack Black.
It looks terrible. Yeah. It looks awful.
Listen, the first time I saw this trailer, the first thing that came to my mind was, this is an Eric Bickle movie. I was so blown away by it that I was profoundly in my chair going, man, EB's going to love this. So the basic premise here is it's a haunted house, essentially, with a clock in its walls that's counting down to some doomsday-esque type scenario. Eli Roth directed it. Now, Cakes, you and I are fellow horror fans, so I think you'll appreciate some aspects of this. So this is kind of a throwback to the, remember the PG horror movies that we'd watch in the 80s and 90s, like Poltergeist, Gremlins, things like that, that weren't hardcore violent, but they were family friendly enough where you could watch them with your your parents.
Valdez thought he had a poltergeist in his bedroom like 2 nights ago. He had a close call.
Well, those movies were freaky, and this is Eli Roth. So Eli Roth is probably one of the most disturbing filmmakers out there, who did like Hostel and Cabin Fever, and now he's making a PG, you know, family horror film, essentially with the Amblin backing, who did, you know, some very famous Spielberg movies. But yeah, it's just that Jack Black, Kate Blanchett, you have Kyle MacLachlan. I don't know if you guys watch Twin Peaks. He's like a big star on that show. But yeah, the movie's
Twin
fine.
Peaks.
Yeah, listen, the movie itself is fine. I mean, it's definitely not great, but it's definitely not bad. And I think that if you're a kid and you want to see a horror movie and go with your family, I think that this is definitely one to do because it's not R-rated and not too violent. So I give it a 3. It's definitely worth seeing. But guys, in October, that's going to be the month where it's going to get silly. Yeah, we have the new Halloween, which I've seen. I actually just recently interviewed Jamie Lee Curtis and John Carpenter for that, which was surreal. It was crazy. Michael Myers was like walking around the lot while we were doing the interviews, and up the street was the Psycho House. Yeah.
That's
it's true. I still can't believe that his family named him that. That is truly amazing.
Yeah, it's a true story.
Who would have thought it'd be a cult classic?
Oh, my God. Wait, your brother's name is really Michael Myers?
Yeah.
What year was he born?
83.
I mean, that's just
The movie was 78. How did your parents not know that?
There's an oversight.
They literally have no idea.
Isn't it spelled the same way, too? Is it M-Y-E-R-S?
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. Did they
know it was a famous name?
I mean, I didn't think they knew that it was going to be a movie that AMC would show 20 times on Halloween.
Your parents.
My dad wanted to name me Freddy Krueger Myers, but my mom put a stop to that.
I just don't understand. That movie was massive. It was 5 years after it came out. I think your parents did a wacky bit. I think it was on purpose.
Well,
there's
doing
no
the
way.
Bit because maybe, both kids, maybe, Michael and Matt.
Maybe my brother was conceived on Halloween.
Maybe it was.
Wait, Dad, when he introduces himself, does he say my name's Mike? Like what? Like I can't imagine he can normally introduce himself to people with his full name.
He does Mike.
Yeah. Wait a second. Isn't the Wayne's World guy? Isn't that also
Mike Myers?
Yeah. That's Mike Myers as well.
But Mike Myers, he goes by Mike Myers, right? I don't think he goes by Michael Myers.
No, he goes by Michael Myers.
Plus, I think
you're a homicidal maniac.
Oh, it's such a bad bit.
Jason
your parents,
Voorhees out there?
I'm sure there is. There has to be.
We got to get Valdez's parents on the phone and just ask them this. I want to know what happened.
You know who delivered? You know who delivered my brother?
Oh,
I mean, this is such cakes.
Who delivered your brother? Yeah. Dr.
Loomis? Yeah, Dr. Loomis.
Of course.
Stupid.
In Haddonfield.
All right.
Dr. Loomis is a funny bit. That made me laugh. That was actually really good. Was that Donald Pleasance, right?
Yes,
who played him?
Yes.
Oh, man.
All right, Kevin. Thank you, buddy.
All right. See you guys.
All right, man.
All right,
talk to
Kevin.
You soon.
JP. Baba. Yeah, yeah.
I get none of the Halloween references. All I think about is the Saturday Night Live guy.
Have you ever watched the original Halloween?
No.
He doesn't do horror movies.
I don't do horror movies. Why would I watch something to be scared? Life is scary enough.
Because it's great.
I don't like being scared. Hence, I don't like heights. I don't like roller coasters. I don't like anything that's going to scare me.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Join us right now on the Matt's Swearhouse Hotlines, our Redskins beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan, Craig Hoffman. What's up, Craig?
I'm good, guys. How are you this morning?
Doing
well.
Hello, Seahawk.
You know, I follow a lot of your social media stuff, your tweets this week. I wanted you to kind of get a chance to tell our audience. Sort of, you like to break down the film. That's a lot of work. I don't have the patience for it, and I certainly don't have the knowledge background to do it either, to be honest with you. But you went through that tape, and you said, I don't know, you said it was probably basically better maybe than what you thought. Wasn't quite as bad as you thought, and certainly Alex Smith wasn't as bad maybe as you thought going in.
Well, I would say Alex wasn't as bad as I thought. The tape as a whole is... It was the fart noise, you know, that you saw on Sunday on television. But what you see is, you know, you come out of that game going, there's got to be chances to throw downfield, like this captain checkdown stuff that his reputation was, like, what the hell? And you go, and then you watch the tape and you go, you didn't really miss a whole lot of shots. They were playing so high. I talked to a couple guys this week and they basically never seen coverage like they saw last weekend, where it's not just cover two, which is designed to prevent deep shots, but they're playing cover two and it's Tampa two. So the middle linebacker drops deep as well. And like Jordan Reed even couldn't get behind that middle linebacker because those guys were dropping so deep into coverage. And so you had to be quick underneath. And, you know, there's definitely some throws that Alex wants back. And what happens in a game like that is the typical 6 to 7 shots you have deep in a game becomes about 3. And if you don't hit them, you're screwed. And the Redskins not only didn't hit them, let's see, I think there's 4. The Richardson one where they did hit. There's the Doxson one that's a chunk play that I'll count as a shot, and he drops it on the sideline. There's the other Richardson play that's another chunk play over the middle where he gets hit and drops it. And then the one that Alex really missed was to Jameson on a seam ball, and it's a bad throw. But when you only get one chance for like a home run play, which was the Crowder one, and you miss it, like it becomes scrutinized in a way that it wouldn't if it's one miss out of, say, four home run ball misses. And so the execution required, or the level of execution required for what they needed last Sunday was extraordinarily high thanks to what Indy was doing, and they just weren't up for the challenge. But I don't think that's as much on Alex as it was on, say, the offensive line.
What did you see from the offensive line? Because we heard Jay Gruden talk about the Colts' movement, but also just watching as fans, it just looked like they were more physically imposing, the Colts' defensive line, than the Redskins' offensive line.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I had an interesting talk with Trent Williams about this yesterday. And what he talked about was how part of it was they knew some of this stuff was going to happen, but if you can wear them down over the course of a game, all of a sudden stuff was going to start open up. So you almost have to take, because of the how much movement they have and their quickness and things like that, you're going to have some misses early. And that's the NFL. The other guys get paid too, and that's where they're good. But because they couldn't sustain drives and convert some of these third downs, or, you know, give themselves a chance to convert third down, because it seemed like they were always in third and nine, then you don't get that second play of a drive where now you can come back and knock a guy off the ball and you start to wear down. You know, the 1 yard gains become 20 yard gains because you finally get the blocking right. And so I thought that was really interesting. And the way Trent explained it actually made sense. Hopefully the way I just relayed that made a little bit of sense, where if they got more looks, they would have been successful because of the cumulative effect of wearing down on a smaller front.
So like a boxer who, they say, right, goes to the body early, it pays off later.
Right, exactly. And they never got a chance to get to later because they ran so few plays because they couldn't sustain anything. And that comes from just simple lack of execution. And, you know, guys, like, it was all across. LaVal had a couple. Yeah, absolutely. And everyone wants to hate Sean LaVal, and everyone's excited that he's not going to play this weekend. But Trent had some where he got beat. Brandon Sheriff got beat. Morgan Moses got beat. Chase Roullier got beat. And so the fact that you're losing in pass pro and not giving your guys a chance to get down the field on those third and long situations and convert, or in the run game, you're mistargeting runs. That was the other kind of common theme where I don't know enough about running the football and offensive line play to be able to give you a great explanation. But basically, like, who are you supposed to block? And they could not get their assignment straight way too often. And I will say, one of the more interesting answers I think Alex Smith gave this week, and I was told with him, you're going to have to read between the lines a lot. He'll never throw anybody under the bus. But I asked specifically, like, how do you feel like in you and Chase Roullier are working together to set protections and set targets in the run game? And he goes, it's a process. To me, that means he's not happy with that. And I don't know whether he's not happy with his own performance in that regard, or whether he's not happy with the way Roullier is setting things up, or the way the coaching staff is telling them to do stuff because they're making it more difficult. But clearly that is an area where they need to improve.
So we know LaVal is not going to go. He's dealing with a calf injury. What's the latest on Sheriff and that knee issue that flared up with him?
He's going to play. He's practicing with a brace on his knee, and it's obviously going to slow him down a little bit, but I think his performance is not going to be affected greatly by that knee injury, as far as we know.
Can we expect, how do you expect the running game to perform this week?
I think better. I don't think they're as bad as it was last week, and I think that they're motivated to come out and prove that they're a lot better than that. I don't think it's going to all of a sudden be Arizona again where they're going to run for 150, but I think you should see a much more useful running game. I'll put it that way. I don't know that it's going to be great. I would doubt that it would be terrible again. Green Bay plays a lot of different things up front, and that can make the targeting and stuff, you know, a little squirrely at times, or if you get a front that you're not exactly sure who's coming or how they're going to do things. And the other thing too that Indy did that made it really difficult was they would move post snap. You know, you hear like stunts and twists and things in pass rush where two players essentially flip their routes to the quarterback. The Colts would do that stuff in the run game where their linebackers would come over the top in weird ways. Scraping is the technical term for it. And so that actually made the targeting a lot harder too, not just this pre-snap movement. And I don't think Green Bay does nearly as much as that. So it's a lot more of being able to line up, find your guy, and then drive them. And then it's a matter of winning your one-on-one matchup.
We're joined by Craig Hoffman, covers the Skins for 106.7 The Fan. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Craig Hoffman. Chris Thompson's been amazing through the first two games. He's actually led the Skins in targets each of those first two games. I was a bit surprised. He also has led the Skins in red zone targets as well with three. Do you see any of that changing heading into week three against the Packers, or will he lead the team in targets again?
It wouldn't surprise me if he leads them in targets and red zone targets. It's a little surprising. I mean, I get why. They can get matchups with him that they like all the time. They get him out in space on linebackers. And, you know, typically your best linebacker is going to be covering Jordan Reed. So you get your second best coverage linebacker on a guy as good as Chris Thompson. And that becomes an instantly favorable matchup. And that's why Alex is looking for him down there, in those tight spaces. And so, overall, I get why he winds up being a heavy target, but I think that this offense is going to be better when Reed and Crowder are your leading target getters. Alex had to check the ball down a ton last week, and it wasn't, you know, I also don't want to, you know, say like Alex was awesome last week. He was better than I thought he was going to be when I went back and watched, but there were some opportunities where you wonder if he could have pushed it downfield a little bit more and gotten like, you know, 12 to 15, kind of those intermediate amounts of yardage. And, you know, over the middle, though, there wasn't a lot there, and they did a good job of clamping down on Reed and Crowder and kind of having two players around them at all times, someone underneath, someone over the top. And I think this offense is going to be better in the long term if they can at least get Reed and Crowder the targets. And nevertheless, you know, the guys on the outside, I think those guys are going to be more selective with their targets. But when the offense is going through Jordan, going through Jameson, quick slants, you know, then you can open up some seam ball, stuff like that. That's where, A, this offense has been its best in general over the past couple of years, and B, where Alex has been his best in Kansas City with throwing to Travis Kelce and some of the other stuff they did over the middle. Then take your deep shots to guys like Tyreek Hill, now obviously Paul Richardson, Josh Doctson on the outside when they present themselves. So Chris is going to be heavily involved. He's going to get 15 to 18 touches a game, and that's going to continue to be a part of it. But for his, you know, 20 touches, for 14 of them to be targets, that's not sustainable, and they don't want that to happen.
All right, what can we expect defensively? Big challenge, obviously, you have Aaron Rodgers. He may be banged up, but he's still friggin' Aaron Rodgers. Is this going to be the week where Kerrigan and Preston Smith get home, or is he going to get rid of it really quickly? You know, what are the challenges beyond just Aaron Rodgers that the defense faces?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Redskins, I think, are top 10, if not top 5, or maybe even they're still technically first overall in overall defense this year, because they just have not allowed a lot of yardage. So as frustrating as last week was, where they get those three drives and the pick plays, and they couldn't figure it out, and that was enough for them to lose last week. The rest of the game, they were really good, and they've despite the lack of sack production, been able to get some pressure on the quarterback. Or, you know, the one thing I would say they're doing really well this year is they're tackling really well. And I think that's the other thing too, is Aaron's going to be able to dissect you a little bit. He's going to get his completions, but can you prevent them from becoming big plays? You know, you think of week one for the Packers on Sunday Night Football when Randall Cobb goes 75 yards for that game winner. It's catch and run. Like, you got to be able to be on top of these guys, and even if he completes balls in tight windows, just make tackles immediately. The biggest thing for them is they've got to communicate. And if they're confused at the snap, he's going to dice them. And that happened a lot last week. That was the biggest, like, negative defensive thing, was the inability to communicate, to not get on the same page. And it caused the problems in the pick routes and all that kind of stuff. And it also caused problems, just complete bust. Like, the T.Y. Hilton touchdown is because Quentin Dunbar ran one thing and DJ Swearinger ran another. And then T.Y.'s running scot-free over the middle, and all Luck's got to do is lob a ball that any of the five of us could have completed. So it's something where I don't know what to expect. I would expect them to perform well and make it difficult for Rodgers, but you also have to understand that that includes him making some insane plays because he's Aaron Rodgers, and as long as you don't give him the easy stuff and make it easy for him, then you can do well enough that your offense should be able to put up enough points to win.
Hmm. All right, thank you. Thank you, Craig. You're out of the prediction business, right? You don't really like
to do that? If you guys will let me be out of the prediction business, because it's just being wrong a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to do it. I figure we're going to lose, but play much better. That's just sort of the safe bet.
Yeah, that's kind of, I think, the safe bet. I got a funny, like, the thing that we were all saying in the media room yesterday is the way this team operates, they will either win this one or they'll lose this one. We'll have 2 weeks of hell on the radio, and then they'll go beat New Orleans in New Orleans. because that's what this team does.
Just so stupid, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. Hey, if we were still in the prediction business, EB, and good at it, you know where we'd live?
Yeah, not here.
Yeah, yeah, the desert.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it.
Yep, you got it. See you guys.
All right, good stuff, Craig Hoff.
But joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, legendary college hoops coach Rick Pitino. He's got a new book out, Pitino, My Story. Takes you through the biggest recruiting scandal in NCAA history and his 40 years of coaching basketball. Good morning, Coach.
Coach.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's everything?
Hey, we're doing well. Thanks for doing the show. You know, I noticed that in the book, some of the excerpts that we read when it first you were first promoting it, you talked about probably being done coaching. And now you're doing interviews and saying, yeah, you're definitely done. Question for you, why? You know you could definitely get a job, maybe at a lower level Division I. You could do NAIA. You could do maybe Division III like Coach Calhoun. I would think you'd want to maybe end on a better note to solidify your legacy a little bit. Why are you done?
Well, you know, legacy is an interesting word. I think that your legacy spans over a period of time. You know, it's growing up. Three of my idols growing up were Joe Paterno, Vince Lombardi, and John Wooden. Those are the three people I admired most. Well, if you look at Joe Paterno, you remember the ending and so on. But if you really study his legacy, Joe Paterno was a lot more than that. John Wooden, you know, a book comes out and says, well, Sam Gilbert got him all the players, and he did this and that. And the man I knew had nothing to do about Sam Gilbert. I didn't think of him that way. So the legacy, I'm not going to let some misfortunes. The things that happened were very misfortunate. I was not involved in any way. I say that in the book. That doesn't mean that I wasn't the head coach. I'm disappointed because I've mentored 30 assistant coaches the right way and have gone on to do great things in the game. But I know it's my time to get out. It's not that I don't love coaching. I eat, sleep, and drink the game all the time. I just got to be involved with the game in a different capacity.
Coach, when these things, you say misfortunes, the allegations, whatever, you know, came about with your program, a lot of people were saying, well, how could a head coach not know what's going on in his program? You may not have known every detail, but in a general sense, how could you not know? What do you say to those people?
Well, I go in great detail in the book. I mean, the most obvious thing is if a player or a graduate assistant was doing the wrong thing in a dormitory, the last person that's going to know is me. They're going to do everything humanly possible, from the players involved to the person involved to the people involved, to keep that away from me. They knew right away that they would all be off the team. They would all be fired. So I would be the last person. It's quite obvious. And the other thing is, as they say in the book, the dormitory is named after my brother-in-law, my best friend in life, who I lost in 9/11. I built that dormitory as a shrine to him, something that would live forever. So as you read the book, the answer is obvious. I would know nothing. And there's no way I could have known anything because the assistant coaches didn't know. Security didn't know. Six players on the team did not know. 20 managers didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably be the last person. But that doesn't make the reprehensible behavior right, not knowing. I mean, there are times in life where you don't know what your children are doing and who's closer to your children than a mom or a dad.
Right. That's definitely true. What about the issue there with the Bowen kid? And I know that you were saying that you didn't have any knowledge of any payments that may have been alleged to have either transacted or promised. The sneaker companies, you said it was all them. It wasn't you. But you had to know when a kid like that kind of falls in your lap there last second that something must have been going on, right?
Not at all. In my lifetime of 30-plus years of being a head coach, only one time in my life, one time, did someone come up to me, a family member, and ask me for an illegal inducement. Now, that spans 30-some-odd years. I have never in my life given $5 to try and entice a player to come play for me. It just wasn't my thing. I'm not chastising anybody who had done it, and even though it's illegal. That wasn't my thing. I didn't recruit guys that were leaving in 3 or 4 months. I recruited the Gorky Zhangs, the Donovan Mitchells, the Russ Smiths, the Terry Rozier's. They weren't even ranked in the top 50. So I had a whole different way of doing things. Doesn't make it right, doesn't make it wrong. But I never gave an illegal inducement to a player and never thought about that. So when this kid fell into my lap, the way he explained it was he wanted to go to Arizona. Then two players came back. Donovan Mitchell was going pro, and it was an opportunity. He drove 6 hours in a car with his parents. We went out to a sort of like a Chick-fil-A for lunch. He paid half the tab. So there wasn't anything that made me think there was anything wrong. And I've been with Adidas for 16, 17 years, and they haven't lifted a finger to help me. So why would I ever think they were going to do something like that? And to be very honest with you,
yeah,
he's a very good basketball player, but he's not Donovan Mitchell.
Right.
So even though he was a highly ranked basketball player, I wasn't sure how good he was. I've seen him play one time, and although he had a nice reputation, as you see, he wasn't drafted in the first or second round coming out of high school. Now, I do think he's a terrific young man who did not know about what was going on. Now, I don't have any proof of that, but I don't think his mom knew, and I don't believe he knew. And I think he will become a very good basketball player in time. He's got good size. He's 6'8", handles the ball, shoots the ball, and I wish him nothing but the best.
Talking to the legendary coach, Rick Pitino. He has a new book out called Pitino, My Story. Of course, everybody knows he won two national championships. But, of course, you coached in the NBA. And I wanted to ask you kind of your take on this. A lot of people are saying the way that the game has changed in the NBA with so many three-pointers being shot, they credit Mike D'Antoni a lot for that fast-paced game. But I remember when you first coached the Knicks, all of a sudden the Knicks were jacking up a ton of three-pointers. And same thing with the Celtics. You were kind of ahead of the curve there with taking threes versus twos.
Well, the first year in college, the three-point line carried us to the Final Four with Billy Donovan. The first year was put into effect. We led the nation in three-point shooting. And then I left Providence, and the New York Post called it Pitino's Bombinos because we took so many threes. But it's not that I was ahead of the game. I just felt that, obviously, if you can create the three-point shot and take a high-percentage shot, and equally important, stop the other team from shooting a high percentage or taking a volume of threes, you're going to be way ahead of the game. And it led to a lot of success for me at every stop along the way. And it's a weapon right now where there's no longer a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 position anymore. It's fours and fives are shooting threes. Cousins now is stepping out shooting threes. Durant's a great three-point shooter. So the low-post player, the Dwight Howard, going back to, obviously, to Wilt and Russell and all those greats, there's really not that triangle offense of having that center in the low post and everybody working off that center is really not the way the game is played any longer.
Coach, you know, JP mentioned the two national championships, and I see in your Twitter bio, you know, you have the two national championships there. I guess you must feel like nobody could take that away from you, right? Even though the one in Louisville has been vacated, you obviously feel different about that.
You know, it's not vacated. They took a banner down and they fined you. You can't erase history. Mm-hmm. You can't take a championship away. Now, you can take a banner down and you can fine the team, and whether you think it's just enough. But you can't erase history. We won the championship fair and square. Six players watching a striptease act in a room is certainly improper behavior. But that's you don't take a championship down for those type things. That's not an extra benefit where it was a performance-enhancing thing where you're using steroids or you're cheating on an exam and you got into school illegally. None of that was. It's not nothing enhanced their performance to help them win a national championship. So it's kind of ludicrous in my estimation. And the players right now, six of them are suing the NCAA over defamation. And we'll see how that turns out.
What happened, Coach, to that big investigation? Remember, it was about a year or so ago when that big report came out, like on AP or whatever they had it, and you know, like all of these coaches were implicated. We thought something was going to happen. There was in Arizona. They mentioned Larry Nate. All these guys. Maryland's mentioned in there, and most of it based on the sneaker company stuff. But then we haven't heard anything. What happened to that?
Well, the trial is going to happen October 1st, and there's a chapter in the book. It's an interesting chapter. You guys probably have seen the Showtime performance with Billions. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that at all?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a chapter in the book called Billions, and it's all about the Southern District of New York, which is the same thing in the show. And they're the ones that started this. A scam artist named Marty Blazer started this whole thing and said, look, give me a lighter sentence, basically, and I'll deliver all these college coaches who are cheating. Well, what they came away with 4 years of investigations, of using the FBI, of enticing assistant coaches to take money, and all these other things, they've come away with two Adidas reps, an AAU coach who kept the money, and he wasn't. They had to drop the indictment against him because he didn't give it to a family. He kept the money that the FBI gave him.
Right.
And then they came away with four assistant coaches. So they've spent millions of dollars of getting FISA warrants and wiretapping, and the trial is October 1st, and they haven't come away with much. Now maybe there's a lot more to it. But right now, the indictments are coming up in the trial October 1st, and I don't know what's become of any of it. I'm not sure that we should be using the FBI with all the problems we have in this world to try and bring down assistant coaches.
Joined by the great Rick Pitino, legendary college hoops coach, has a new book out, Pitino, My Story, 40 years of coaching basketball. I'm wondering if you can point to a particular era which was the most fun for you, because we all were born in 1970, so we grew up in the era when the Big East was dominant. You had coaches like yourself, Louis Carnesecca, P.J. Carlissimo, John Thompson, Rolly Massimino. Like, there were just heavyweight coaches going against each other each and every night.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I tell a story in the book about a Big East meeting with Rolly Massimino. Boeheim and P.J. set me up. We weren't making much money back then. It was a ball deal, McGregor ball deal. Rolly just won that great national championship against Georgetown. And PJ and Boeheim said, look, last year we all got $2,500 for using McGregor basketball. Mm-hmm. McGregor now wants to give Rolly, Boeheim, and St. John's $12,500, and the rest of the guys they want to cut off. Rolly's going to get up there and say, I cut a deal. We're going to get $12,500, but the rest of you, I got you up to $3,500. Why don't you say that we all should get the same? I said, well, why would I say that? I'm new. And Boeheim says, Rolly loves the pros, and you're coming from UB Brown, who he loves and respects. He'll respect what you're saying. I said, I don't know, guys. I'm new. I'm young. I don't know if I should do this. And PJ chimed in and said, no, you definitely should do it. So Rolly stands up and pontificates that everybody's going to get $3,500, where the other guys are getting $12,500. The only reason I bought into it is Boeheim was going to get less. So why would he want to get less? So I stood up and said, hey, Rolly, I think we all should get the same. Congratulations on winning the championship, and we all should get the same. Well, he went off on me like you wouldn't believe. You young effing so-and-so, who the hell do you think you are? And we almost came across the table, had blows against each other, and I see Boeheim and PJ laughing hysterically, and they totally set me up. And it was one of the funniest things. John Thompson couldn't stop. He was smoking a cigar. He was choking on a cigar. And everybody in the room was laughing. The meeting had to get broken up. And those days were so good because there wasn't a lot of money, but there was such, not only camaraderie, there was such intense competition in the Big East. And I loved every second of it.
Coach Pitino, we know one of your outside interests is horse racing. One of our producers is a big-time degenerate horse racing gambler. He wants your Breeders' Cup picks coming up in early November. Do you have any early leans?
You know what? The one thing I notice, all producers and people behind the scenes on radio broadcasts, TV broadcasts, are all degenerate horse people.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
I owned horses too, Rick.
Yeah, you did. He owned a horse.
You ever heard of Mama Grizzly?
Mama Grizzly. Didn't do so well, though. You have any picks?
No, not yet. Obviously, it's we're about a month away or so, but I'm in the horse business. I used to own about 50% of most of my horses. Now, being out of coaching, I have about 2%.
Somebody said that you owned a horse called Party Dancer. Is that really true, Coach?
Well, here's the way media sometimes gets carried away. Yeah. I'm on the West Coast. I own a horse, and the partner I've never met in my life, the trainer says, do you want to name him? I said, no, I don't want to name him. But tell my partner, whoever it is, he can name it. Never met the gentleman. I'm wrapped up in basketball, and I go out there, and it doesn't even dawn on me to name. I go to see the horse run. He's his third race, and I go to see it. I'm in the winner's circle, and somebody writes an article, Pitino's insensitive. naming a horse Potty Dance. And then it dawned on me the name. I met the owner that night, and I said, "Were you poking fun at me with this?"
Right.
He said, "Look, Rick, I have no idea that you're even a basketball coach. I don't follow sports. I put in three names because I love Tina Turner. And I put in three names with Dancer, all in because of her. And I came up with Potty Dancer because of Tina Turner, and she reminded me of a potty dancer. I just loved her." And I said, "Oh, okay." He had no idea who I was. They write a whole article about this name as if I had something to do with it. And it just shows you how things turn out like that.
Yeah. Hey, but you were in the winner's circle. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, we won the race.
What's that like?
Must feel nice. All right, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it. Good luck with the book.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Patino, my story, 40 years of coaching basketball.
Yeah, that went
I just
okay.
Went back. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to try to just like completely grill him. You know, that's just rude.
Oh, it was fair and entertaining.
Yeah, we're not investigative reporters no, that are breaking down.
We're not
down
journalists.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Right, I'm not going to go through all the details of the dumb case. I mean, he does bring up some points. You go, it's true.
Kind of sounds believable.
I mean, if you have a bunch of strippers in there, you're going to go run and tell coach you had a bunch of strippers in the.
You can tell he's getting up there in years. He's calling it a striptease act. Yes. I mean, no, who would do that? An old codger.
And he did have a good point, too, to vacate the national championship because some guys got some strippers. It was not like it helped them play. Unless you say it was used as like a recruiting inducement.
Right. I mean, how are strippers going to help you win a national title? I've said this for two decades. You can go ahead and strip championships. That means nothing. You've already lived that experience. Like, if all of a sudden it would kind of suck if Maryland's college basketball championship was taken away. But I'm sorry, I already lived it. Already got the
like
joy.
If I found out that Taj Holden was banging hookers all year, and I, you know, they took it away.
Right.
Byron Mouton,
yeah, one of the assistants was setting them up with hookers
Lon
all year.
Dixon was illegally
you'd
recruited.
Be so bitter if they walked into the lobby at Xfinity and grabbed the trophy and took it out of the lobby.
Oh, they cracked the glass.
Yeah, wouldn't that be terrible?
threw the net in a bonfire.
Right. Horrible scene. Fish not here with us today because he's actually heading to Hollywood Casino tomorrow, hanging out at the sportsbook with Skippy. But thanks to Baker Mayfield, he hit on Fish's best bet yesterday. And I believe, because I saw some tweets from Skippy at Big FN Winners, you were catching a lot of heat early in the game, particularly when it was 14-zippy.
Mm-hmm.
And look what happened. Baker
all the haters and faders are out there talking their smack.
You got rescued. You got rescued by Tyrod getting concussed.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how it happened.
That's true.
The end result's the only thing that matters. I hope everyone put a lot of money on the Jets and fade. I hope you lost your paychecks. That's what I hope.
No, Jason, just do the same amount every time.
Jason, what was Hugh Jackson thinking starting Tyrod? I mean, just night and day
difference.
Well,
that's the last time you'll see him on the field unless Mayfield gets hurt. That's obvious, right? Mm-hmm. He was awesome.
Yeah, he was great.
And Darnold played like a rookie. He made some huge mistakes, two critical picks. But that was fun to watch. So I hope everyone lost hundreds, if not thousands, if you took the Jets.
Where were you watching the game?
I was at Bonefish all night. Everyone was tweeting Skippy, saying, "What a loser. The big fat hairy thing's a loser."
Was Jay Gruden there? Was Jay Gruden saddled up to the bar?
No, he wasn't there. No,
that's off-season cakes.
Okay.
Maybe during a bye week.
Gotcha, sure.
So, hold
all right,
on.
So, you know, I had to call in because we have this 9-week endorsement, and my goal, I know you guys are still up money on me, but my goal after the 9 weeks is for you guys to have to pay.
Right.
So I wanted to call in with my Friday best bet. I don't like doing this. I haven't done it yet. This is one of my podcast picks. I'm probably jinxing it.
Ooh, double
Why
down.
Are you doing that? You like it so much?
I just like it. Central Florida is at home. My primetime game on ESPN. I believe it's a 7 o'clock kick. They
is
are playing Florida Atlantic.
No, Ricky. Different.
I get confused. Florida Atlantic.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
What is he talking about?
I just asked the question.
He thought Lane Kiffin wears UCF gear on the sideline, and he doesn't.
Oh, no, Josh Heupel wears the UCF gear.
Oh, that's right.
Gear.
He took over for Scott Frost.
Right.
So Heupel likes to play even faster than Scott Frost played last year. He wants to run about 1,000 plays against Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic has one guy that can hurt you. That's Devin Singletary, Cakes, who I have on my college fantasy team. He had 5 touchdowns last week.
Keep bragging.
But I like Central Florida so much. This opened at 13.5. It was bet up to about 14, but now it's dropped to 12. All right, so the money's coming in on Lane Kiffin, but I don't think it matters. I think Central Florida wins this game by 3 touchdowns tonight. So 12 is a good number. I just think that this program is on a mission. Last year they obviously went undefeated. They want to beat everyone by 100, and they've got the firepower to do it. They got a really good quarterback. I like the Knights. Lay the 12, so that means you're going to fade it, and I hope you lose. So that's my play tonight. I also like, this is not on record, it's not one of my plays, I kind of like Illinois catching 4 touchdowns tonight, because this might be a look-ahead spot for Trace and Penn State. They play Ohio State next week. But,
yeah, but that is not a documented pick.
It is not. It is not. I'm just probably going to play it. Anyway, Central Florida is the pick, boys. So right. Get your bets in on Florida Atlantic right now.
Go Owls!
What is your record right now on Bish's best bet? You've had a bit of a comeback here the last few days, and you've hit 2 of your last 3.
Well, it's 4-8. I mean, it's not great, okay. But I'm inching my way back. All right, Ricky, I hear you laughing.
You're trying to get back to respectability. We see what's happening.
All right, so that gives you some reason to watch the game tonight. Bish. Central Florida plays at 7, and then Trace plays at 9.
We were just talking about the Redskins with J.P. Finley from NBC Sports Washington.
Yep.
And he was saying that in years past, the Redskins tend to play up in games that you expect them to get blown out, and the opposite, like we saw against the Colts, games when you expect them to win, they lay an egg.
Very true.
What are your expectations against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers? Aaron Rodgers apparently didn't even practice yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it yesterday. That's the wild card is Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I expect him to be as good as he was last week. Redskins got to get after him, make him move around a little bit, hit him, flush him out of the pocket, make him run. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to bet against Aaron Rodgers, but this is the type of game. I'm picking the Packers, but this is the type of game that the Skins win. They've done it over the last 5 years. On paper, you don't expect them to win. They're playing a better team on paper, but you know, and the Skins looked awful last week. This is the way the NFL is. You know, I mean, look at the comeback last night with Baker Mayfield. No one could have predicted that. Were they down 14-0 or 14-3?
14-0.
Yeah, it was 14-0. So I wonder what the live betting number would have been on that at 14-0. I'm sure it was great.
I'll tell you what, I wish I had live bet it, because as soon as you saw Baker enter and rip off his first pass or two, you're like, oh, they're going to win this game. They're going to win this game.
Well, that's what actually
you could see it right away.
Yeah, Skippy and I were watching at my house. And he goes, they're going to come back and win. I said, man, there's a long way to go. But
how about that
pass really good
to Jarvis Landry? It was a great pass, great catch. And I'm just thinking, that's a pass which Tyrod would never throw.
Yeah, you know, like the back shoulder. Yep, you're right. That was a beautiful throw.
So where are you watching?
Did you see the people in the streets of Cleveland last night after the game?
Well, they all can celebrate. Don't they get, like, free booze
now?
They're
a desperate bunch.
Yeah.
Dude, it looked like New Year's Day. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Well, I think J.R. Smith went out there, took his shirt off, and was running around with the crowd.
I mean, it was awesome to watch.
No, I mean, I'm serious. I think J.R. Smith was on, like, Instagram, said if they win this, shirtless J.R. is back.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield is a hero in that city.
No, he's going to be good.
And he deserved it. But I don't know. I'm picking the Packers in a close game. But I would not be shocked if the Skins pulled this one off.
Where are you watching the games tonight from?
Tonight, here's my day. All right, so I just took a shower. I'm going to go to physical therapy with my girl Nikki over at Virginia Spine.
Did Skippy soap you down in the shower?
No. He's in the
basement.
That's later.
He
is. So then I'm going to go to therapy for about 45 minutes. Then guess where I'm going after that? I'm going to the office to pick up my paycheck.
Oh,
you're kidding. Oh, yeah, AWOD's got it right in his hand right now.
That's preposterous. AWOD,
make sure you give it to Colette, because she's expecting it. So I'm going to go pick up the paycheck, come back, deposit it, go to lunch with Skippy, and then tonight we're going to hang out with some of the Big Fat Winners listeners at Bonefish in Ashburn.
Oh, it's Bonefish. So you're doing 2 appearances. You got one at the Bone?
And then tomorrow morning, head down to Hollywood Casino at the Sportsbook, the one and only. Hang out for a few hours, play some fatties, and then tomorrow night, I'm not sure we're going to watch the games tomorrow. It's homecoming this weekend for my daughters.
Right.
So they got the game tonight and then the dance tomorrow, so I got to be around tomorrow night.
Do they have dates? How does Papa Bishop deal with their dates?
Yeah, their dates are Noelle and Celine and
girls.
Alex and Samantha.
Remember,
yeah,
he used to say.
I don't think he truly believes that.
Yeah.
Well, I know what you mean. The
how you
same sex deal?
How you wanted to raise them? Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't hate it.
All right, we got to run.
Hey, Have a good weekend. Yep. Central Florida tonight.
All right, buddy. All right, Ricky. Now, for us, it's Florida Atlantic.
I hope there's a Lane Kiffin offensive outburst in that game.
Well, the guy with the 5 touchdowns. Have him do that again.
That would be nice. I don't think it's going to happen.
We'll see. You guys didn't start when he was 0-0. He's 4-8. You jumped aboard.
We jumped off pretty early.
No, we jumped when he picked 3 games. As soon as I heard him say he's picking 3 to try to get it back, because I think he was 0-3. He was 1-4.
Okay.
And he said he was gonna go 3. And
so you're up a little bit. You're up like a unit.
Yeah, we're not up a lot. I think it's a process.
We're 6-3.
That's solid.
That sound about right?
Oh, that's really good.
6-3.
Really?
And apparently, he's got some scam where he doesn't even have to pay juice.
Juice!
So we're really good. But 3
well.
Units.
Again, it's a process. Got to let it play out over time.
He can hit tonight. He can't hit every time.
We're playing. You know what we're doing? We're playing the long game, JP.
Understood.
Playing the long game here. In the long game, we win.
Should mention, Cakes and I are doing the Junkies pregame show, Washington Game Day Uncensored, at 11 o'clock before the Redskins take on the Packers. And I believe we've pretty much penciled in. 11:45 is when we open up our fantasy notebook.
That's
so
correct.
For everybody who's got last-minute lineup questions.
And you do.
Because things change on Sunday. We've got the injury reports, the actives, the inactives. 11:45 is when we do it. You listen to the fantasy notebook on Washington Game Day Uncensored.
Yes.
Any other big plans for you this weekend, Cakes?
Big plans. I do not have big plans. I'm going to watch my daughter play under the lights at Magruder.
Nice.
Field hockey game tonight. Nothing on the docket for Saturday, and then Sunday, Skins game day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.